I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, another in our series of conversations with the candidates. James Brochin has represented Northern Baltimore County in the Maryland Senate for almost 15 years. Now, he's running in the Democratic primary for county executive. The current executive, Kevin Kamenetz, is term limited and running for governor. His proposal to build a new Delaney High School has the folks in Lansdowne crying foul. And a new report by the county's Spending Affordability Committee has raised concerns about the fiscal conditions that will face the next county executive. How does Senator Brochin's experience in the state's highest legislative body prepare him for a position in the executive branch of county government? Jim Brochin joins me in Studio A. Plus, Kamau High and Sean Yost of the Afro newspaper stop by for an Afro check-in. First, the news. And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Midday on this Monday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Today, it's another in our series of conversations with the candidates ahead of the June 26th primary elections. My guest today is State Senator Jim Brochin, who is one of three Democratic candidates in the primary race for Baltimore County Executive. The current county executive, Kevin Kamenetz, has served the maximum two terms. He is now running for governor. Senator Brochin has represented the 42nd District in Central and Northern Baltimore County for four terms. He was first elected to the Senate in 2003. He heads the Baltimore County delegation, and he serves on the Judicial Proceedings Committee, the Special Committee on Substance Abuse, and the Executive Nominations Committee. He's an insurance broker. He is 54 years old, a single father with a daughter named Catherine, who is attending the University of Colorado, and he lives in Cockeysville. We are streaming our conversation on the WIPR Facebook page. We'll take your calls and comments in the second part of today's show. Senator Jim Brochin joins me in Studio A. It's good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Good to see you. You nailed that bio. You got it.
We try to make the news not fake news around here. You know, we try to get it right when we can.
That's good.
First of all, Senator, my condolences to you and your colleagues. We learned yesterday of the sudden death of Senator Wayne Norman. What do you know about that, and what can you tell us about Senator Norman?
Well, Wayne was my seatmate in judicial proceedings. We sat next to each other for the last 2 years. Really good friend, really good guy. Moderate Republican who just listened to both sides and just figured it out, and really nice guy. And I mean, it's devastating. And I found out yesterday, it's absolutely devastating.
He died yesterday. We still don't know a cause of death, but certainly it was not expected. And a young guy, 62 years old.
Yeah. And I mean, I was on the Senate floor Friday commemorating a friend of mine who died, and Wayne stood up and talked about what a good guy he was. And you know, Wayne and I were talking about getting together next weekend, and this is a tough one. It just shows that it's also temporary, you know.
Yeah. Every day, you know, got to make the most of it. Yeah. You are doing your best to make the most of a run for county executive. There's a report that came out by the Baltimore County Spending Affordability Committee. A guy named Tom Quirk, who's a Democrat, heads that committee, and they raised some questions about the fiscal stability, the fiscal condition of the county. They say the county's financial outlook presents immense challenges that the next administration and council will be forced to address, whether by cutting spending or by raising revenue. What's your understanding of the status of the budget?
Well, they just gave $43 million to a developer in the center of Towson, so they might have more money than they think they do. And I thought that money should have gone to build Towson and build Delaney High, but I think it's a question of priorities, and I think I just gave you a perfect example. We also have had big surpluses in Baltimore County over the years. And again, this goes to priorities of where you want to spend the money. We've had surpluses as low as $230 million and as high as $315 million over the last 7 years. This county executive has his priorities, and the next county executive will have his or her priorities. I think that spending surplus money, which is one-time surplus money on one-time expenses like school construction for Towson and for Delaney and for other schools, is a good source of money because it's not a recurring expense. So I look at the report, but I also question the priorities, and I don't think we need to be bailing out developers. This is capitalism. They can do it on their own, and that $43 million was a big chunk of change, and Unfortunately, it passed by a 4-3 vote, and the author was one of the people who was one of the deciding votes, as was my opponent. And I think it's a bad use of taxpayer dollars, and I'm not going to do it if I become county executive.
How would you respond to folks who say, look, these developers now in so many ways have an awful lot of leverage? If they want to consider building these big projects, I mean, here in Baltimore, we have these TIFs, these tax increment financing devices that are given to companies like Under Armour to encourage them to put their headquarters here, you know, down in Port Covington. There are a lot of folks that say that's the way the game is played now, that these developers, if the county isn't going to accommodate them in terms of taxes and subsidies, then they'll move somewhere else.
Well, I mean, I think Baltimore County has a lot of other amazing things to offer, like their schools and their education system. The city and the county are two very different things. And I think one thing we've learned from the city is if you keep giving these TIFs, you're not going to get any revenue. And if you're not going to get any revenue, you're not going to be able to pay for any of these things. And as a senator, I see that in the General Assembly, the way the Baltimore City schools aren't getting the money they need. And they look back and said, well, why aren't they? And the reason is because they've been giving tax credit after tax credit. So a lot of these companies don't have to pay taxes. I don't want to replicate the same thing in Baltimore County because I don't think we need to. We have a lot of other things in Baltimore County. We have great open space, although we need more. We have, as I said, an outstanding education system. And I think we have a quality of life in Baltimore County where we don't need to give out tax breaks, crony capitalism, corporate welfare to developers. You know, and the other thing is this, like, which developer are you going to pick? And that's the biggest problem, because I've got a lot of developers who come to me and said, well, where's my money? You know, and a lot of restaurants, you know, they gave a tax credit that I was totally opposed to a restaurant on York Road. And I'm like, well, and the other restaurants said, well, where's my tax credit? So when you go down this road, you got to make sure of what you're doing, because there's a fairness issue, and the fairness issue shouldn't be based on campaign contributions. And I'm hitting something that's pretty solid and substantiated. All you have to do is follow the money. I put a bill in the legislature last year, and it's law in Prince George's County that says if you're a developer and you have given campaign contributions to a council person or the county executive in that councilmanic district, and now you have a project before them, they have to give you the money back. And if they gave you a contribution in the preceding 3 years. And of course it failed. It became law in Prince George's County 15 years ago, and Prince George's County has issues, but they don't have issues with developers anymore. And what it does is it extracts the money from the system, and you won't have a pay-to-play system, and then development projects will be based on its own merit. And I'll give you a perfect example. You can't tell me that the zoning change at Chestnut Ridge Country Club, which my opponent Vicky Almond flip-flopped on, that had money not been involved in that they wouldn't have ruined the last trout stream in Baltimore County. I mean, they took 65 acres of gorgeous open space in the Falls Road Corridor, and now they're going to put 45 McMansions there. Originally, it had been downzoned a year earlier, and they weren't going to, you know, and they were going to put 3 or 4 houses there. So if you, my contention, and I plan on executing this if I become county, or when I become county executive, you're supposed to say when, if, but is that, at the end of the day, let's take the money out of the system and let's let these development projects rise or fall on their own merit. And some of them have value. I mean, now the development community is running around saying, well, Jim Broach is anti-development. Well, that's not true, okay? There are great redevelopment opportunities on the Reisterstown Road Corridor in Pikesville, where I grew up. There are great redevelopment opportunities in the center of Towson. I have been campaigning on the Liberty Road Corridor for the last 2 years. There are outstanding redevelopment opportunities on the Liberty Road Corridor. There's a food desert there. We need quality grocery stores. We need quality restaurants there. And Security Square Mall is another example of a fantastic redevelopment opportunity. There's no reason that that area can't follow the same model that we have at in Hunt Valley. I mean, there are opportunities there.
Yeah, talk about this development that you mentioned, the $43 million. It's in the middle of Towson. For
yes.
Folks who don't cover the county or, you know, pay attention to the county if they're not residents of the county, give us a thumbnail sketch of what's going to be built there, and then tell me whether or not you think it would have been built there without this subsidy from the county government.
Yeah, so fair question. And the developer came in and cut a deal with the county executive, and the county gave the developer free water and sewer, which cost tens of millions of dollars. And then the developer found out that there was rock in the ground. And the developer said, oops, I didn't know there was rock in the ground. And the project has sat for 2.5 years. It's a city block or a county block that has been a hole in the ground.
This is right off of York Road.
Yeah, it's right on York and Bosley, right on that corner. And it's been sitting there, a city block, demolished. They shouldn't have even demolished it. They should have waited until they issued permits for 2.5 years. It's hindered business. It's hindered economic development. And the developer said, well, I didn't know there was this rock in the ground. This isn't what our test showed. And basically, it's going to sit here. It's going to sit here. And it did. And then another developer bought it from him. The other developer came forward and said, the only way I can make this project work is if I get tax credits, because a California pension fund is the people who invest in this. And the only way they're going to invest in this is if we get a tax credit. So the county council voted 4-3 and gave them a $43 million tax credit. And my contention, if I was county executive, would have been, you know what, take it out, to rebid it, take it out, find another developer. Maybe the project's not going to be as large. My God, maybe we might even put green space around the project also and make it look really nice and redevelop it and let capitalism rise or fall on its own merits rather than using taxpayer money to bail out this developer.
So you think it could have been built without the subsidies, even though this particular developer came and said, look, there's no way that this is going to fly unless we get some help.
This developer lost money. I mean, we can't go around Baltimore County and bail out developers that lose money. There are developers that lose money. There are developers that make money. I don't think that's government's function.
Is your general philosophy about managing growth, because obviously Baltimore County is an attractive place to live for an awful lot of people. You mentioned that school system, you know, like Howard County, like Anne Arundel County, has school systems that people are attracted to if they've got young families. What can you describe your overall development philosophy about how to manage the fact that, you know, the county is growing, that you've got people coming into the county? How do you make room for those folks while maintaining a standard of living for the folks who are already here?
I don't think there's that much room left for residential development. My campaign is based on more green space, more open space, more parks, more ball fields, more rec centers, a quality of life that we're accustomed to, that I believe that we're going to start losing. I was campaigning yesterday in Catonsville, and the Beltway is right on top of neighborhoods in Catonsville. And to be honest with you, it's troubling. And I don't want to, as you go up the Beltway, to see that. So my campaign is going to be based on quality of life. We're going to do more. We're going to do things like innovative bike trails, a public-private partnership. I was in Sanibel Island 20 years ago, and I remember the way they do bike trails there. They have the road, they have 4 feet of grass, and then they have the bike trails. Wouldn't it be nice if we started doing things like that in Baltimore County? In Montgomery County, they don't use plastic bags anymore. I think we should consider the same thing in Baltimore County. So I'm running a campaign based on a quality of life that I think is deteriorating, and I don't think there's that much more room for residential development without hurting quality of life. I want more green space in this county, and that's what I'm running on.
Mr. Quirk's committee on spending affordability says that there are some real concerns about coming up with the revenue that's going to be necessary to meet pension obligations, to meet the inevitable economic downturns. I mean, they're talking about 3% growth. I mean, President Trump is talking about 3 or 4% growth. There are people who say that's nuts. There are other people who say that that's possibly doable. Quirk and his committee say, look, this isn't going to be sustainable for years and years and years. If you encounter those kinds of problems in your first year or two, should you be elected? How do you deal with it if you're not developing things, if you're not creating situations that produce revenue?
Well, we are going to be developing things. We're going to be developing education opportunities. We're going to be building new schools, and we're going to be working on education. And we're going to probably be scaling back, hopefully, on the STAT program, and worrying about a third assistant principal.
Tell folks what the STAT program is.
So the STAT program is what Dr. Dance started, where every child has a personal computer. And I think it should be done as a pilot program, but we're spending all of our resources in the education system. And I know we're jumping over to education now, but it's important because it's what makes Baltimore County unique. And we need to worry about the third assistant principal at Loch Raven Academy, which is in my district. We need to worry about enough school counselors, enough social workers, enough teachers in classrooms. That's the types of things that I think we need to worry about. And that's what I think drives economic development. I mean, when people move from the city and come to the county, or people come from other places in Baltimore County, the first thing I hear, and I've heard it for 16 years, is I was really enticed by the educational opportunities for my kids in Baltimore County. So I think that should be the drive of economic development. I don't think it should be building more houses and taking down more acres of trees and forest land, because that's the type of thing that is a quality of life issue, and that's what I want to build on in the county.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation about education. Maryland State Senator James Brochin is my guest on today's edition of Conversations with the Candidates. Senator Brochin is seeking the Democratic Party's nomination in the June primary for Baltimore County Executive. We will continue with Senator Brochin after a short break, and when we come back, we invite you to join us with your comments and questions. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org, to find us on Twitter at @MiddayWIPR, and we are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WIPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Quick word about tomorrow's program. It's another edition of Midday Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks of the University of Maryland. At last night's Academy Awards, one of the movies that was mentioned frequently wasn't even nominated for anything, Black Panther. It's a cinematic phenomenon and a huge moneymaker. Many people think that it's a cultural game changer as well. Dr. Stanford Carpenter is a cultural anthropologist. He's an artist and a comic book creator from Chicago. He'll join Sherry and me, and we'll have a conversation about the movie's potent themes and its place in the cultural panoply. That's coming up tomorrow here on Midday. If you're just joining us today, my guest is four-term Democratic State Senator Jim Brochin, who represents the 42nd District in Baltimore County. He's running for his party's nomination in the June primary to become the Democratic candidate for Baltimore County Executive. We are streaming our conversation on the WIPR Facebook page, and you can send us a message there. You can give us a call at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, to find us on Twitter at @MiddayWIPR. Senator, let's take a call. We do have a couple of calls, so if you stick those headphones on, that'd be great. Charles in Sparks, welcome to Midday with Senator Brochin.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Mr. Hall. I have a question for Senator Brochin. As a constituent of yours, I have seen very little progress from any of your bills. There are very few that actually pass. There are very few that actually even get consideration. You are one of the most conservative senators of the Democratic Party, and yet you want the nomination for Democratic executive. It just kind of seems like you're running for county executive because you can't win back your seat because it's become too red. It's just my opinion, and that's just how I see it.
Right. Well, Charles, thanks for the call. Senator, I mean, you do represent a district now that, you know, voted for Mr. Trump, voted for Mr. Romney. And how does your experience in the Senate, that's a legislative body, translate to your capacity to be a good executive?
Well, there's a couple things to the call. I mean, the two biggest pieces of legislation that I passed that I think are incredibly important is we have a hybrid school board, an elected school board, because that was my bill and I got it passed unanimously when it had failed the year before. So we have an elected school board, which is going to be representative of the people because of a piece of legislation that I passed. In addition, I've gotten a number of bills passed in regards to making sex offenders more accountable, not only in civil court, but in criminal court also, and increasing their sentences. But give me the second part of your question again.
Well, how does experience in the legislative body translate into ability to be an executive?
So I've learned how to deal with 46 other people in order to get my legislation passed. And it gives you a training ground and a breeding ground that is just, I mean, it's off the hook. I mean, it's every day you have to compromise, you have to form consensus. If there's one thing that Mike Miller taught me, it's how to count to 24, because he needs 24 votes to get everything in the council. I'll certainly know how to work with four, how to get four votes and move legislation forward. And I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I think it's a great challenge, and you learn how to dissect bills and make priorities, and we've done some really good things.
You've got nine people running on the Democratic ticket in the primary to become the next governor. Have you endorsed anybody?
I have. I'm supporting Rashern Baker. I think he's an incredibly solid executive in Prince George's County. He was a really good legislator. I think he's got an even-keel personality and deals with both parties very well. And I think he can move Maryland forward. And he's very impressive.
If Mr. Baker's elected, obviously you two get along quite well. How about Governor Hogan? He's a very popular governor. If he ends up being elected again, certainly there's a rather famous series of feuds between the current county executive, Mr. Kamenetz, and Mr. Hogan. How do you get along with the governor?
The governor and I get along fine. And look, I support the governor when I think he's right, and I don't support him when he's wrong and when I think he's wrong. And one thing that we worked very closely on is I've co-sponsored all this gerrymandering legislation and the redistricting stuff, because I think the redistricting maps are flawed. I don't think we should be choosing our voters. Our voters should be choosing us. And I've stood with him when he's put the legislation forward. So I work well with both. And I think if you had both in the studio right now, they would say the same thing.
Let's go to a call. Caller Mary Ellen in Towson, you want to talk about the next subject that I'm interested in talking about as well. Welcome to Midday with Senator Brochin.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, first of all, I want to address the fact of Jim Brochin's conservatism. I have lived in his district for the last 30 years, and I have seen Jim. He is a conservative, fiscally conservative Democrat, but I have seen him change and evolve and grow with the rest of our society when it comes to things like marriage equality and other social issues that are very important to us. Also, we are not all Republican in that district, and Jim has been a huge asset to our community. I live in Towson, and he has helped us secure green space, secure and preserve green space. He has helped us with all of the dire needs we have in our school system.
Right, Mary Ellen, I appreciate those observations. Tell us specifically what your questions about the schools are for Senator Brochin.
I want to clarify a point, because I don't think you all quite understand the $43 million money that was given to the developer at Towson Row. And everyone wants smart growth. And revitalization credits for economic growth are due to any developer in that area that completes a project or a portion of the project as the reward. It is an incentive for the job well done. Like you give your kids a reward for something they do, right? But you do not reward them before the job is done, especially when the same developer that was in the first job that failed is still part of the second job.
Okay, well, Mary Ellen, thank you for your comments. I appreciate it. One of the things I did want to ask you, Senator Brochin, is about education. There's a big disagreement about new high schools, Delaney High School, Towson High School, Lansdowne High School. Mr. Kamenetz was for refurbishing Delaney Valley High School, or Delaney High School, and now he's suggested just a couple weeks ago that we should build a new one there.
Right.
People in Lansdowne went nuts. I mean, tell me where you stand on that. Explain what the issue is as you see it and what you think the solution is.
Well, I do think the issue goes back a little bit to what the caller said, and then I'll move forward with the answer to your question, and that is this. I think that the council thinks it's incumbent that whenever a major developer, gets in trouble, that it's their job to bail them out. And I think we have to stop that kind of thinking, and it's not government's role to do it, and it should go for these schools. As far as the schools go, I support a new Delaney. High school, I support a new Towson High School, and all you have to do is walk through both of them. As they're, especially when you go through Delaney, I mean, it's literally caving in. Lansdowne, I've been through Lansdowne. They have committed between $60 and $70 million to Lansdowne. And the community said that, and that renovation is up from the $35 to $40 million that they agreed to at first. So they offered them another $25 to $30 million, and they move forward with that. If the Lansdowne parents come back and they say, "Well, we don't want that. We want something else," then we want a new school. Then we'll look at it and we'll address it. And I think it comes back to where we're going to get the money from. And I think
The putative cost for a new Delaney High School is like $143 million. That's a piece of change.
I haven't seen $143 million. I've seen closer to $100 to $110 million. But there are a number of ways. First of all, you can forward fund. Secondly, you can use surplus money. And thirdly, and you alluded to this, my relationship with this governor is very good. My relationship with probably who the Democratic nominee, in my opinion, Rashearn Baker, is going to be very good. And I think you build relationships. I built them in Annapolis. And I am certain, and I didn't come here to knock Kevin Kamenetz, but I'm certain that if this county executive had a better relationship with this governor, then in Baltimore County, we'd be better off as far as building these schools.
Is that the fundamental difference that you would guess would be between a Brochin administration as opposed to a Kamenetz administration? What can people expect to see stay the same, and what can people expect to see different?
I'm not gonna engage in pay-to-play politics with developers. I'm going to preserve more green space and open space, and we're going to start recycling plastic bottles and cans, and we're going to build schools. And the relationship with the state of Maryland, with the governor's administration, is going to be solid, and we're going to be able to leverage more money out of it. So that's a few of it right there. Let me give you something else. We have an opioid issue. It's the second largest in the state of Maryland. Under my administration, we are going to build a state-of-the-art facility, and we're going to emulate what Anne Arundel County does, where when somebody who has addiction issues is ready for help, they can go to a police station and they can go to a fire station. They're going to be met with a caseworker from Baltimore County, and we're going to give them treatment on demand. If you take a look at our homeless problem, it's been ignored.
Treatment meaning naloxone and drugs, methadone or counseling, or what kind of treatment? What does that mean?
So let's be clear about naloxone. That isn't a treatment. That's just so you don't die.
That's a crisis intervention.
Yeah, that's a crisis intervention so you don't die. And then you talk to emergency responders, and then they literally are out with the same person 2 weeks later. I'm talking about sitting down with that person and their family or loved ones and finding out whether outpatient treatment or inpatient treatment is the way to go, and then helping them through and realizing that, and if anybody lives with somebody or has a family member or friends, and when I speak across the community, most people start nodding their heads, treatment isn't going to work the first time or the second time or the third time. It's a commitment that this county needs to get on, and we will, and we'll follow through with them. With the homeless population, a difference between myself and the Kamenetz administration, we need to look at best practices. Cuyahoga County in Ohio does housing first. Tell me the benefit of having somebody who's homeless come in, treat them during the day and give them food and shelter and let them use the internet, and then at night returning them to the elements. So they may come back the next day in worse shape. We're going to help them. We're going to start a pilot program like they do in Ohio, where we're going to take homeless people, bring them in and put them in an apartment unit, and bring services to them. We're going to sign them up for Social Security. We're going to partner with Vehicles for a Change so they have a car. We're going to give them living skills. We're going to give them psychological or psychiatric treatment and put them on the medication they need. And then we're going to help them find jobs. And we're not going to take all 900, 1,200 homeless people in Baltimore County and do it all at once. We're going to do this in a controlled manner with 40 or 50 to start off. We're going to follow them up, make sure social workers follow with them and help them. These are like the biggest difference in the word is vision. I mean, we can make this county be whatever we want it to be. We can have a county where there's quality of life and green space and open space and parks and ball fields, and we recycle and we look after our homeless. We look after our people who have addiction issues, and we take care of our schools. Or we can keep going on the plateau we're going on. And one of the things with, I guess plateau is the wrong word, but one of the things in Baltimore County is it can run on autopilot if you want it to, but but why would you want it to? There's a lot of opportunities out there that I've addressed.
What about affordable housing? I mean, there's homelessness. That's one issue. And, of course, then it's a political philosophical argument about is that the county's responsibility, the state's responsibility, the federal government's responsibility, the neighborhood's responsibility. You know, but what about affordable housing? I mean, there's a consent decree in place about allowing subsidized housing at various places in Baltimore County. There seems to be very few, if any, neighborhoods in the entire county that are up for that idea. It's always not in my backyard.
Well, I think there's two things. First of all, when somebody comes in and wants to build a unit in the future, county government can say, look, 10% or 15% of that has to be affordable housing, and we can do that. But if you're talking about something like the source of income legislation that's been floating through Annapolis in the years, I don't support that. And one of the reasons I don't is that the mandate on that is that you have to is that the Baltimore City Housing Authority that the vouchers come from the Baltimore City Housing Authority, and you're asking the people of Baltimore County to do business with the City Housing Authority, which I believe hasn't served the citizens of Baltimore City very well. I mean, they had that scandal where it was sex for services, where in order to get your plumbing or your heating fixed, some of the workers there.
Yeah, but no indication that anything like that was happening in the county.
No, but under the legislation, you would use Baltimore City vouchers and landlords and tenants would be doing business with the Baltimore City Housing Authority. It's just not for the Baltimore County Housing Authority.
Should the affordable housing be concentrated in a section of the county, or should it be spread out and diffused throughout the entire county?
I think we should take a look at where developers are building in the urban centers of the county, like the Reisterstown Road corridor, like in Towson, and like in other places, and where they want to build apartments like they want to do in Baltimore County. And I think that before we say yes to that, we should say, well, 10% or 15% of that has to go to affordable housing. I think that's a better way to go, and that the citizens of Baltimore County will only have to do business with the Baltimore County Housing Authority.
We have an email from Matt, who lives in Catonsville. He says, I hear you talking a lot about Towson and Delaney High School. What about everybody else? Towson gets a lion's share of development money, but what about Arbutus, Dundalk, Woodlawn, and Lansdowne? I live in Catonsville and can't even get sidewalks on busy roads, but Towson gets their sidewalks repaved well before everyone else. Where are you on Lansdowne getting a new high school comparable to Delaney? We talked a little bit about this a few minutes ago, but again, here's the difference between being a senator
right.
for a district in the county and the executive for the entire
yeah.
county.
Yeah, I mean, and the best answer to your caller is I'm going to be the executive for all of Baltimore County. And the reason I've been door knocking in Catonsville and Woodlawn and Randallstown and Lansdowne the last 2 years is so I can understand what they need and understand their perspective. And then when I become county executive, deliver. So, look, he makes a good point. Right now, I'm the senator for the 42nd. But as county executive, I will be the county executive for all of Baltimore County.
Let's go to the phones to Amanda in Sparks. Amanda, welcome to Midday with Senator Jim Brochin.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm Amanda. I live in Sparks, Maryland. And Senator Brochin, I wanted to first say I appreciate your comments on housing first and on inclusionary housing in Baltimore County. I think that's really important. But what I wanted to ask about is the Maryland Healthy Working Families Act. I have called your office several times in Annapolis to support earned sick leave for workers in Maryland. And I received a response from your office saying that you were contacted by several nonprofits in your district and that this would place an undue burden on nonprofits having to provide earned sick leave. And so I work for a Maryland nonprofit that operates in Baltimore County and provides a robust sick leave hours. And so, frankly, I really feel like your response that providing earned sick leave would cause nonprofits to not be able to provide services is unfair, and it's an excuse. And so what I wanted to ask Senator Brochin is, why have you not stood with workers in Baltimore County?
All right, Amanda, thanks for the call. Lou Klippinger had a paid sick leave bill that the governor vetoed. The legislature overruled that veto. You voted with the governor on that one.
I did. And in fairness to your caller, it's time we start talking specifics. I spoke to Itinerus, which offers a vast array of services to people who are on the autism spectrum and other nonprofits, but I'll name them particularly. I spoke to the executive director there and other nonprofits. 1 or 2 days of earned sick leave would have been great, and I supported an amendment to do that. But if you take, for example, the nonprofit I just mentioned, and they have 30 employees, and you now have to give 5 days of sick leave to them, which comes to 150 days, you're not just paying them for 150 days, you're paying some other workers to come in and cover those 150 days, so you're paying twice. And the problem is that they're reimbursed by Medicaid. And other nonprofits across Baltimore County and across the state of Maryland are reimbursed by Medicaid, which means they get a set amount. We didn't raise Medicaid. We just did this.
Is it a matter of nonprofits? For example, would you have supported the governor's suggestion when it came to paid sick leave, which was to have a bill that covered employers that had 50 or more employees and that kind of stuff, as opposed to Lou Klippinger's bill, which was like 15 employees?
No, I actually thought the governor's bill was kind of backwards also, because anybody who knows, and I'm in the private sector in my other life, I'm an insurance broker, anybody who knows most companies that have over 50 employees, they're offering anyway, and I don't think we should have been using taxpayer dollars to do it. I didn't have a problem putting the burden on the private employer, but I just thought 1 or 2 days a year, or even 3, would have been a good start. But too many nonprofits who deal with the developmentally disabled said to me, "We're going to have to cut services, and we don't think it's worth a trade-off."
What about the county? Let's talk a quick question about the schools. Do you have confidence in the integrity of the Baltimore County schools? We've got the former, superintendent of schools now under indictment. We've got the current one who's in an interim position, also under a cloud of inappropriate use of her expense account. What do you think?
I'm concerned. I'm really concerned. I'm concerned that she's following Dr. Dance's path way too closely. I'm concerned that we're taking our resources and putting them, as I said before, all on the STAT program and leaving too many schools without that additional counselor, without that additional teacher. I talked to a teacher who deals with kids who have dyslexia, and the ratio is supposed to be 1 per 7, and she's got 16 kids in her class. I think we have let too many things go by the wayside in order to make sure that everybody has a PC. Every kid from first grade to 12th grade has a PC in their hand, and I have grave concerns about that. And this school board is getting ready to spend another $175 million. They're putting all their apples in one cart. And no, I don't have confidence.
All right. We are basically out of time. We're going to take one more call. Irwin in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Senator Jim Brochin.
Good afternoon, Senator. We still have about 35 days left in the current legislative session, and I'd like to address my question to that. In the past 3 weeks since the Florida high school massacre, there have been considerable outcry from so many people who would like to see strict gun control measures. Yes or no, do you support a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, and how would you justify your position at this point? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call.
So representing Northern Baltimore County, I jeopardized my Senate seat in 2013 to vote for the Firearms Safety Act of 2013. So the answer is yes, I do. And I also voted for a companion bill, which means domestic abusers do not have access to their weapons and can have them taken away, which is unlike one of my opponents also. So the answer is yes. And you know what? Why wouldn't the whole country go to age 21? That like blows my mind more than anything. If you take a look at these mass shootings, I mean, these kids' brains are not developed, and to make it another 4 years before you have access to any of these weapons is common sense that should cross party lines. But we have supported the most comprehensive gun laws in the state, and I've been a supporter of those.
Maryland State Senator Jim Brochin is a Democrat who has represented the 42nd District, including much of North Central Baltimore County, since 2003. He's running against former Delegate Johnny Olszewski Jr. and Baltimore County Council Member Vicki Allman in the primary for Baltimore County Executive coming up in June. We've got a link to Senator Brochin's campaign website on our website, wypr.org/midday. Senator, good to talk to you. Thank you so much. We will stay in touch.
Thanks for having me.
This has been another in our series of conversations with the candidates. Next Monday, I'll speak with 3rd District Congressman John Sarbanes, and on Friday, Al Redmer will join me here in Studio A. He's Maryland's insurance commissioner, and he's a Republican candidate for Baltimore County Executive. Primary election is on June 26th. Early voting begins on June 14th. That's in 101 days. We've got to take a quick break. When we come back, Kamau High and Sean Yost of the Afro Newspaper join me for the Afro Check-In. But before we go to that break, on Mondays here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of the people who lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. We get their names from a researcher named Ellen Worthing, the Baltimore Sun, and the Baltimore Police Department. So far in 2018, 43 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. 7 victims of homicide were reported last week. One person is a 41-year-old man who's yet to be identified by the police. Another unnamed victim was the unborn child of a pregnant woman who was shot a week ago yesterday. The mother survived, but a friend of hers died of gunshot wounds in that attack. She was identified as Jasmine Chandler. She was 28 years old. 4 other victims died of homicides last week. They are Preston Green, age 26, Paul Jackson, age 33, Shamar Poole, age 38, and Tyrell Kimball. He was 25 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.